You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, June 5th, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Republicans warn Trump over his Mexican tariffs. They threaten to maybe whisper more subtle critiques. Also on the program today, Democrats pass DACA legislation, 2 decades in the making. It'll die in the Senate, like about 50 other bills that the Democrats have passed in 5.5 months. Mid-dropping polls and a new plagiarism scandal, Biden announces he still supports the Hyde Amendment, and Warren drops her green manufacturing plan. Payday lenders are back. It all started at a convention at the Trump National Doral Hotel. Yes. Trump administration fights the youth climate suit. And Steven Crowder's racism and homophobia has some intriguing bedfellows. Senate and House prep legislation to stop the Saudi weapons sale. Trump administration further shuts down access to Cuba. And Bernie heads to a Walmart shareholders meeting. Wait, what's the classic joke? Presidential candidate walks into a Walmart shareholders meeting. You won't believe what happens next. All this and more on today's program. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. Matt is on, I don't know what to call this. Some type of weird vacation.
Vision quest.
Brendan's on the board. That's why I was waving like that. We gotta split the difference on the sound there.
There's something going up with the board. Can you guys hear yourselves?
Yeah, we can hear.
All right, good.
I can hear. It's all, yeah. No, you got it. I just, you know, the thing is, like, you know how you listen to an album? Well, maybe people don't listen to albums anymore, but it used to be you'd listen to an album, and every time, if you listen to it a bunch of times, that's what I would do. There must be something somewhat wrong with me, but because I'm so habitual. Like, I would listen to an album like 70 times in a row just because I didn't want to go and change it. And it got to the point where, like, I would never know the names of the songs because I don't clutter my mind with that type of information.
Right.
But as soon as the one song would end, you'd hear the next song start in your head. So that's what happens with that music at the beginning of the show. I have in my head, it's all muscle memory. So even the slightest change throws me off, which is okay. But I don't mean to, did a good job. What's that? Yeah, because I'm trying to signal like lower the music. Wait, no, not that much. Up. No, stop right there. Okay, that's good. Yes. Well, not an agitated conductor, like a conductor. I mean, if you've ever seen a conductor, they look fairly agitated. Yep. Check. Yeah, I think you're pressing the wrong way.
Nope. It just didn't get it. Didn't get a switch back last night.
Yeah.
Sure, we're good
Matt,
now, right?
Matt leaves and then changes everything on me. It's really nice.
What did he do?
No, nothing. Just that.
Last night, Matt took a long.
Oh, turn him down.
He took a long, deep, contemplative drag of a blunt.
Just a little bit. What? He did?
And as the smoke wafted out of his lungs, he was just like, I'm going to mess everything up for Brendan tomorrow. Have a good show.
It's never the ones you suspect.
No, I mean, I suspect. I mean, if there's any, if there's weed involved, I certainly suspected Matt Leck for that. All right. So let's get on with what's going on today. We will get to Joe Biden's having a bad day, folks. Super bad day. And I think it's going to get a little bit worse. But before we go there, so Bernie Sanders, in the wake of his announcement last week, I think it was, where he proposed having workers get seats on board of directors, not unlike we see in Germany. Labor unions in this country, I think, you know, it would take some adjustment in terms of like trying to figure out how you maintain the relationship to management that is optimal, but also be able to sort of have some say in the governance. There was a second proposal that he had in terms of co-ops, which was an extension of legislation that has, I think, already been introduced in the House and maybe even in the Senate. I'm not sure. Which would allow for family-owned businesses that want to sell there to be a bridge loan fund from the U.S. government to allow and finance the purchase of that company by the workers.
He started these first bills related to this in 2014 with Leahy as a co-sponsor.
Right. So there's and this is building on that to expand that program, essentially, and promote more worker-owned companies like JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. I have to say that the time I spent at Just Coffee, I imagine maybe there are some co-ops that are not done well, but I don't know. But this one was it was impressive in terms of the sense of supporting all of the workers. They support each other as workers and as co-owners of this entity, but they also support their suppliers with basically the same level of commitment that they support each other with. And so, you know, this is what these businesses do. They protect communities as well as protecting the specific needs of the workers. So good stuff all around. In the wake of those proposals, Sanders was asked on behalf of workers at Walmart to go and head to the shareholders meeting to represent their perspective. Here is a video, Bernie Sanders en route. This was posted just 2 hours ago. Here it is.
So what this event is about, what we're doing today, is telling the wealthiest family in the country, the Walton family that owns Walmart, that they have got to start paying their workers a living wage. This is a family that is worth $175 billion. Walmart is a company that provides compensation to its CEO of over $20 million a year, more than 1,000 times what their average worker makes. So what's going on in Walmart is just an example of what's going on all over this country. The very wealthy are getting wealthier, and working people are struggling. So the message to Walmart today is pay your workers a living wage, at least 15 bucks an hour. Allow them to work 40 hours a week. Provide them with decent health care. In a nation in which we have massive levels of income and wealth inequality, we have got to address this issue, and that's what we're doing today. Thank you.
So there is Bernie Sanders laying out his agenda, what he's going to be telling the Walmart shareholders as soon as he gets to the meeting. And Literally, this got tweeted out about 15 minutes ago, 20 minutes ago, half an hour ago, I guess. Kara Cordy, who's with CBS News, she's a campaign reporter, tweets, before Senator Sanders takes the stage at the Walmart shareholders meeting. I guess at these meetings, you know, you imagine it's like a boardroom or a conference table, but it's actually like a big theater because it's a huge, there's a lot of people. CEO Doug McMillon calls for Washington to raise the federal minimum wage. Quote, it's time for Congress to put a thoughtful plan in place to increase the minimum wage. That's pretty good. Very reminiscent of like when Governor Nixon of New York State was able to push all sorts of new legislation before she won the election. In fact, she never won the election, and still we got the benefits of that.
We should always thank Cynthia Nixon for doing that. She honestly really helped it, and no one else was willing to do that. She helped a lot.
But nevertheless, there's Bernie already getting now it's smart play by the CEO of Walmart to call for Congress to raise the federal minimum wage right now, because, and we'll talk about this, the U.S. Congress in the past 5.5 months has passed about 50 bills, some really good bills, that, of course, are going to go nowhere because of Mitch McConnell. And part of the reason why this story about the tariffs with Mexico is so important is it's conceivable that if Donald Trump is able to or actually imposes these tariffs, and his ability to do so unilaterally, I think is I think it's quite possible he does have the ability to do that. I think will seriously hurt the chances of the Republicans to maintain the Senate in 2020. But we will get to that, all that, in a moment. Just remind you that one of today's sponsors is Skillshare. Anyone who goes to skl.sh/majorityreport4, the numeral 4, is going to get 2 whole months of totally free access to Skillshare's entire library of super quality online courses and tutorials. Skillshare is a vibrant online learning community that offers courses on everything from design to video editing, photography, business, technology, cooking, meditation, everything in between. There are Skillshare courses for everyone. You'll have no problem finding courses that will be useful to you in both your personal and professional life. When you want to sharpen your skills with something you already love doing, or if you want to learn how to do something totally new, Skillshare has you covered. They have courses for entrepreneurs, courses on computer coding, web development, personal nutrition, learning new languages, Photoshop, you name it. I mentioned yesterday that I basically, what I'm doing is I'm going through and I'm bookmarking some courses that I'm going to maybe be able to get to like 2 over the weekend. There's a 2-hour one on chess openings. Dominate with the Shilliman Gambit. I don't know what that is, but it's in there. How to take the perfect selfie, that I won't do, but I will do the portrait photography working with natural light. That I'm interested in. And
it's the same thing. It's a distinction without difference, Sam.
I don't want to take a selfie. Science-based workout, proven exercise to gain muscle, improve training, and boost health and fitness. I saw your eyes perk up, your ears perk up with that one, Michael. And the productivity masterclass. Those are the ones I'm going to do it. And then maybe also think like a chef.
Beginner's guide to cooking. I would love with to confidence. Take that one. That would be awesome.
And maybe the lucid dreaming too. All right,
you're very intrigued by the lucid dreaming.
I am.
That's interesting.
I don't know.
You should. I. Who wouldn't be? It's just that's interesting.
Intro to your business social media strategy. I think I may. I mean, I, that's the problem. I got to get more time. I got to get rid of my kids. You can get 2 entire months of free access to every single course offered by Skillshare by going to skl.sh/majorityreport4. That's why the first one I should take is the productivity masterclass. Create a custom system works for me. If I can manage my time better, And I also think they have a class on time management. Just think of everything you'll have at your fingertips for two whole months. Again, that's skl.sh/majority report for. We put a link in our YouTube post and in our podcast post, so check it out. And ladies and gentlemen, as you all know, we all want a haven, a place that feels uniquely you. With Joybird, you get a one-of-a-kind furniture crafted to your unique taste. Turn your ideas into reality with hundreds of styles and options, from rich, buttery leather to the plushest velvet you've ever felt. You want your sofa in aquatic blue? A love seat in bubblegum pink? If you can dream it, Joybird can make it a reality. They even have a beautiful selection of outdoor sofas, lounge chairs, and tables. Plus, their free personal design consultants can help you nail down your design. Joybird also offers a range of kid and pet-friendly upholstery options so that your creations can stand the test of time. Best of all, thanks to their 365-day home trial. That is 1 year, ladies and gentlemen. If you don't love your Joybird, you can return it for a full refund. See how Joybird can help you design your dream space. Find your joy today at joybird.com/majority. You can create the furniture that brings you joy. That's joybird.com/majority. Head over there now and check it out. It's pretty amazing. They've got all sorts of different styles, and you can mix and match everything. Receive an exclusive offer for 25% off your first order by using the code MAJORITY. joybird.com/majority. Offer code MAJORITY. Check it out. And lastly, if you love the thrill of an escape room, with the idea of looking for clues and solving puzzles, well, allow me to introduce Hunt a Killer. It's a monthly subscription game where you become a detective immersed in a murder mystery. Each month, you're going to receive crime scene photos, evidence, motive, and suspect information that you'll need to use to solve a crime. It's so interactive and convincing that it looks and feels real. You'll be racking your brain to solve the mystery and anxiously awaiting the next box of clues. It's perfect to play solo, during date night, or with friends for a game night so you can swap theories. So, I've been talking about this with Myla. She's now into watching Law and Order.
Dun dun.
And I'm thinking,
I thought we had that sound drop.
We do. It's
it's on the board, right?
Well, yeah, here it is.
There we go.
And just to get her engaged in something, and the idea of this, I'm talking to her, and she's piquing her interest.
Who did it?
Well, just the idea, too, that it comes in the mail, and it comes every... I mean, it gives... There's something that's nice about it being episodic.
It sounds really fun.
Right now, just for our listeners, you can go to huntakiller.com/majority for 20% off your first box. They only accept 200 members per day, so hurry to take advantage of this offer. That's huntakiller.com/majority for 20% off your first box. huntakiller.com/majority. So, Joe Biden is having a very, very rough day. First thing that comes out, CNN has a poll that shows that he's dropped about 7 points in, his lead. Bernie Sanders took about half of that. A couple others brought up that difference. Now, 7 points is not a huge thing, but it's outside the margin of error. And the reason why this is most problematic for Joe Biden, as opposed to really anybody else, right? Because like polls are going to go up and down and this and that. But Joe Biden, so much of his support is built upon the premise that he can beat Trump. That there's this weird sort of feedback loop, I think, with the polls that is going to create a problem for him. As long as the polls are staying where they are or going up, it reinforces the notion that Joe Biden has a certain amount of invincibility, that Joe Biden, you know, I may not like him, but he's going to beat Trump, and beating Trump is paramount. And I would agree that beating Trump is paramount. I don't necessarily agree that Joe Biden is a lock to beat Trump. In fact, I would argue that certainly there are people in the 2020 field who I think have less of a chance of beating Trump. But I think that Joe Biden is a much riskier pick, frankly, than the conventional wisdom has suggested. But putting that aside, what I think is really clear is that there's really no reason to believe that he is any more likely to beat Trump than maybe the top other, I don't know, half a dozen, 10 candidates. I'm just, you know, saying that off the top of my head. But his support is mostly, or I would say more than any other candidate by far, a function of this assumption that he can win. So if his polls start to drop, people start to question that premise. So this is very problematic for him. And the other problem he has is that his strategy has been to hide himself. And the reason why he's been doing that is because he wants to run a campaign as if he was the incumbent, as if it was there was a certain amount of inevitability, as if I don't have to sell myself because I'm just going to win, which is that's on some level, that's the message, right? Forgive me, Father. I've sinned. I'm not going to sell myself. And so when that's been your strategy, and part of it is that, as I have contended, Joe Biden is where Joe Biden's at right now because people see Joe Biden as Barack Obama's vice president. They don't remember the Joe Biden pre-Barack Obama's president. And I think Joe Biden's people don't want people to have really a good grasp on that. And the reason is because Joe Biden is a politician from a different era. And even in that era, he was a little bit too far to the right for Democratic constituencies. And even in that era, he was too sloppy. There is a quality about Joe Biden that permeates his campaign and what he does. And that is a sense that he deserves something or that he can get away with something. Like in 2016, where when he dabbled with the idea of running and said and floated this idea that he may run with Elizabeth Warren as a way of sort of stealing her capital as a financial consumer advocate to cover for his deficiencies in that era. In that area. Or when he did it this go round with Stacey Abrams to cover his deficiency when it comes to women, women's issues, and frankly, an understanding of black issues and of minority issues. And it was just his for the taking. Or when he literally lifted from a speech from a British labor leader who wasn't even policy stuff. It was like his upbringing.
No, that was the extraordinary thing. It was Neil Kunnick in 1988, and it was a speech about growing up. It was different. It was like, but it was, I think, it was coal mines. And Biden just shifted, like, the profession and location. But it was literally along
the
line.
That's the weirdest thing.
It was not somebody, it wasn't like, you know, hey, let me lift this inspiring, especially in the 80s. Like, that's a great line, and
yeah,
nobody knows.
Right.
It was like,
that's morning in America,
yeah,
or something.
This is right. How I grew up.
Right. It was literally this is
how
I grew
up. It's like when you're telling a story and you realize halfway through that it actually happened to someone else.
Yeah, except for you're a professional and you've written it, and somebody's written it in your speech. And the weird thing about this is it keeps happening to him. there was reports he had plagiarized in law school. And now there's another example of this. Now, you would think that on day one of the presidential campaign, Joe Biden would say, like, hey, guys, make sure you source everything. All right. I know this sounds a little bit idiosyncratic, but let's make sure you source everything. Here is, as reported yesterday, Joe Biden's campaign has now acknowledged it. They have been lifting language from other groups for its policy plans. And the bad, and what makes it worse is who they've been lifting from. So, for instance, apparently this was noticed by Josh Nelson over at Credo. In Biden's environmental plan, it's language about carbon capture sequestration was lifted almost word for word from the Carbon Capture Coalition's plan. The members of that include Shell, Peabody and Energy, and Arch Coal. His education plan included a sentence word for word from the group XQ Institute, which is one of those sort of like chartery corporate reform groups.
Lorraine Powell Jobs.
And part of the problem here is, A, gives you a sense of where they're looking for their ideas. B, a sense that they don't feel like they have too much of a responsibility to make sure this doesn't happen because they think they'll get away with it. And then it also is indicative of the fact that Joe Biden had no proposals. You know, you see Bernie Sanders has had a lot of proposals that came out in 2016. They've been developing new one. They're well thought out. Elizabeth Warren has these deep proposals that they've been thinking about, that they lay them out. Other candidates, maybe not to the same degree as Bernie and Warren, but they come out with proposals generally in issue sets that they've been working on for a long time. But when you're a candidate with really no ideas, and you're doing this in reaction to the fact that other people are coming out with ideas, I better come out with something quick. This is what happens. This is more indicative in many respects of the fact that they got nothing.
But I like that synthesized point you're making, because just to underline it, they have nothing, they don't take policy seriously, and then their default setting is, let's go to these regressive sources of policy.
Right.
Well, if they had gotten in the second order, if they got things are shifting a bit, so we don't have anything, let's go check out the Economic Policy Institute or the right. Teachers Union or whatever.
Well, I was going to say that that is their policy proposal, to defer to these neoliberal think tanks and corporate entities on everything. So in a way, it's actually pretty honest that they just put them on the website.
Well, I mean, maybe it may be perfectly honest, but I think it's indicative of a problem that they're going to have going forward because there's no real depth to it. And this latest thing about Joe Biden, I think, is indicative of that as well. About a month ago at a campaign event, there was an ACLU. I think she was a volunteer or a stringer. And she had asked Joe Biden about whether he would commit to abolishing the Hyde Amendment. The Hyde Amendment comes from, I think it's the 80s, if I remember correctly. And Henry Hyde, I think, was his name. And it basically says that federal funds, let's say Medicaid, cannot be used for abortions. So you may have private health insurance, and if you need or want an abortion, your health insurance will cover it, or maybe cover part of it. It's a decent health insurance. If you are a woman who is living in poverty, or up to now, and depending on the states, 133% of poverty, and you need an abortion, the Medicaid will not pay for it. And this has been a big problem. Fact, Democrats, in their Democratic platform regarding choice, says repeal of the Hyde Amendment. And so here
and hasn't
is...
hasn't that said some really quickly? Hasn't that been the case for a long time, too?
Long
that's not like new progressive 2016
no.
stuff.
No,
that's been party
school.
Consensus
yep.
for a while.
Here is an ACLU member asking a quick question of Joe Biden. This is about a month ago.
I'm an ACLU Rights for All voter, and I have one quick question for you, and that is, will you commit to abolishing the Hyde Amendment, which hurts poor women and
yes.
women of color?
Yes, and by the way, ACLU member, I got a near-perfect voting record my entire career.
I heard you did, but I'm glad you just said you would commit to abolishing the Hyde Amendment.
Right now, it has to be. It can't stay.
Thank you.
How are you, man?
Yeah, now, what's exceptional about this is not just Joe Biden's...
commitment?
Dismissiveness of like the question, the waving
it was
away.
Odd. It was very
just
odd.
He just wasn't even paying attention sense. To her. Like, I'm not, yeah, whatever. Yes, yes, yes. And she was great about this. Like, I'm asking you a question. You've given me an answer. Now I'm going to reiterate the question just to make sure that you heard it and understood it. Yes, yes, yes. And it comes out today that either Joe Biden lied in that moment, or that he just misspoke, couldn't understand what she was saying. Apparently, the story that his advisors are saying is that they thought she was referring to the Mexico rule, the Mexico City rule, which prevents federal aid money from going to organizations overseas that perform abortions. Now, I don't know how... he could have misheard that. It was
Hyde and Mexico City. They sound very similar.
Very similar. There's a Y in both those things. And, but he has come out and said, no, he still supports the Hyde Amendment. And this is a big problem. It is a 4 decades now, I guess, 80s. Yeah. Almost 40 years. It bans federal funds being used for abortion, except for in cases of rape or incest or to save the life of the woman. He apparently, you know, is embracing it because he thinks it's going to set him apart. But it is, again, in many respects... Hyde Amendment is a real problem for women living in poverty, women of color, and apparently he's just okay with that, even though he has a near-perfect record of voting to support women's rights.
I also just think, well, or the ACLU in general, and I want to make a comment on voting records because it's a really shallow, sloppy way of looking at politics. Like, you know, that was a big thing during Clinton and Sanders. Like, hey, they vote the same way 90% of the time. And it's like, yeah, but the votes where they didn't were the invasion of Iraq, the Patriot Act. So, you know, Joe Biden, I have no doubt, if you look at most of his career, is cast. Probably not actually necessarily in the beginning of his career, but probably in the 90s. He cast a lot of, like, generically the right sort of center-left votes. But the major votes, not only did he vote the wrong way on, like, things ACLU-wise, the Patriot Act, but he also like authored the crime bill. So, you know, don't get lost in these statistics and these vote measuring schemes are, you know, or even like League of Conservation Voters. Somebody could have 90%. That's terrific. That means you voted the right way in a lot of things, but you maybe you voted yes on the most environmentally destructive proposal of them all, which far outweigh nice 90% of votes.
The problem is not
things.
So much voting records. The problem is more just sort of like looking at them statistically as opposed to looking them
qualitatively and analytically.
Right.
Yeah.
And so Joe Biden has a problem here, and it's going to be interesting to see how he deals with it. I think there's a reason why this is coming out now. I think this is in anticipation of the debates. People want to start on this guy quick and early. And so there it is. Here he is. Here's Biden's campaign saying he still supports the Hyde Amendment. Wait, is that what that is? What is that one? Okay. And here's one more problem with Joe Biden, I guess. And this, I think, you know, is consistent with this notion that he can, everything's for, you know, for him. Whether it's Neil Kinnock's personal story of growing up, or whether it's Stacey Abrams' cachet with certain segments of the Democratic voting base, or there is a sense of that Joe Biden deserves something.
It's entitlement.
It's entitlement. And here he is, still trying to show, like, I'm not afraid of my personal space invasion issues.
Come on. Sweetheart. Come on. Let me get your paper.
We're a little secret going here. I want the press to know she pulled me close. I just want you to know, okay? All right? And I would delight it. I would delight it. Anyway.
Weird.
Women love that.
I mean, maybe some do, but like, why?
I'm being facetious.
Seems like a bad idea to joke about that. I don't know. I'm going to start a campaign to start calling Biden supporters Biden bros, because as I've seen people pointing out on Twitter, he has made multiple women uncomfortable, according to the women, and he's terribly weak on abortion rights. So if anyone deserves to be bros, it's people who support that.
I don't think you're going to have too much pushback on that, frankly. Just go over this DACA passage, because it is important. Ultimately, this will get passed in the event that there'll be an executive action in the event that Donald Trump is voted out in 2020. But vote was 237 to 187 for the American Dream and Promise Act of 2019. This would grant Dreamers. These are people who were brought to this country as children, as minors, by their parents, no choice of their own, obviously. And they will get 10 years of legal resident status if they meet certain requirements, high school diploma, participation in military service. And then they would receive, stay out of trouble in terms of, specific problems with the law. They would then receive permanent green cards, after completing at least 2 years of higher education or military service, or after working for 3 years. And this is the first time that this legislation there's been attempts, I think, over the course of 20 years to pass this legislation. It's the first time. Senate rejected four immigration bills. I think at least one of them included citizenship for Dreamers. And this is indicative of, this is for 2.5 million people, incidentally, who have been living with a tremendous amount of anxiety for no reason, for absolutely no reason. Like, I see what it's like to be a 13 or 14 year old kid. This, the enormous amount of anxiety you have just by having to be like a teen or being a kid. And the idea that there's also this element of like, will I get deported? When I walk down the street, will I get deported? Will I be here in 6 months? What will my future be? I don't speak the language from the country I came from, whether it was Eritrea or Mexico or Guatemala or, you know, Slovenia or whatever it was. And will I get sent back to this country that is basically a foreign country to me? 2.5 million people. Very easy for a lot of people to forget that there is a significant portion of our population that walks around in a constant low-grade sense of fear or potential doom just by the very nature of who they are, or what, where they were born, what decision their parents made for them. And it's been passed there. It's not perfect. There are provisions that allow the Secretary of Homeland Security the discretion to deny legal status to immigrants with certain juvenile judgments against them, gang affiliation, etc. But it's a step in the right direction. And it's indicative of what's been going on for 5 months. The House has taken up 51 bills since January, 49 of which they've passed. I think this is actually written before they passed this this DREAM Act. It was. Bills that include lower prescription drug prices, protect pre-existing conditions. Disaster aid is now passed. So I think that's 51 for 51. They passed HR 1, which had a whole host of reforms, bills to save net neutrality, bills to broaden background checks for guns, calls to put us back into the Paris Climate Accord. They passed the Violence Against Women's Reauthorization Act. Chemical facility anti-terrorism standards. I mean, it goes on and on. Federal Civilian Workforce Pay Raise Fairness Act. Basically reinstituting the executive orders that Obama had passed that Trump has reversed. All of which have died in the Senate. Now they've run out of bills. Hopefully they'll start immigration proceedings soon. Maybe there's been they haven't done a great ability of making it about obstruction from the Republicans on these things that I think are would be very popular in and of themselves. But this is what's been going on. And meanwhile, you have all these bills that are passed. They're awaiting a Democratic Senate. Joe Biden came out with a climate plan. Some of it was plagiarized. Fortunately, some of it was also borrowed from the Green New Deal. There's now broad Democratic consensus over many aspects of the Green New Deal, including the dollar amount in public investment, $1.7 trillion, the cost that would be laid on polluters, that there would end fossil fuel subsidies, that there would be economic justice protections for people displaced in the transition from their jobs. They would end drilling on public lands and offshore. There's been a lot of sort of like mainstreaming of these broad positions, not unlike we've seen with Medicare for All. And so there's a lot of encouraging things that are happening, at least to the extent that you can have encouraging things happening when you don't have the ability to do any of this stuff. Now, I can tell you right now that if the Democrats take the Senate and the presidency, they will not deliver on all this stuff. It's just simply not the way it works. Which isn't to say that we shouldn't insist that they do. And the more insisting, the more likely it'll happen. Part of that is going to be a function of who, if the Democrats win the presidency, who that president is. A lot of these things are more likely under some candidates than others. I mean, I think people, I think there's probably broad understanding of that. Just other people might just say like, well, but it's not that important. Right now, the most important thing is getting rid of Trump. And I think that is the perhaps the most important thing, but it's not necessarily the case that by rejecting positions that are consensus positions among Democrats, that you're going to get rid of Trump. Could be just very well be the opposite, at least if you look at the polling. So that's where we stand today. We'll do a couple more stories in the fun half, but I want to go over this briefly because this is sort of amazing to me. We've talked about this. So Stephen Crowder is one of those guys who has been avoiding, you know, any real debates on policy. He has an interesting program. And I just heard the other day from a friend who I don't talk to too often. Her son said to her, "Hey, I heard Sam might debate Crowder. I hope he does, because that guy is horrible." And the kid is a kid. I don't know. He's like 14, 15. And this is the thing that's problematic about Stephen Crowder. That it's really twofold. One, he spews this right-wing garbage. He debates college kids over it. And if you're 14 or 15, you can't quite tell, like, hey, wait a second. That doesn't make sense. Why doesn't he have a real debate about it? He has these pretend debates. It's like when you're a kid thinking, like, wow, these Harlem Globetrotters, they're the best basketball team in the world. Every time they play this team from Washington, the Wizards, they beat them.
Why don't they just play in the NBA?
Why
aren't
they
would win
the,
every single
that's
game.
That's why they probably aren't in the NBA, because they're too fair. Good. And that's what you think as a kid. And the other aspect of what Crowder does, because he's speaking to right-wing inclined teenage boys, who are get jazzed about guns and imagine that you're an adult if you smoke cigars and drink a bottle of whiskey. I mean, this is all stuff. I've been there. I was a kid. I was 14. You look at that stuff and you think, like, that's what it is to be an adult. And you assume, like, that's all the adult stuff that you get to do. And Crowder also sort of mixes in a very healthy dose of racism and gay bashing in a sort of jocular tone, right? I'm just telling jokes about how gay people talk like this. I mean, it's really the most juvenile level of comedy. I mean, it's not even a juvenile. It's not even a level of comedy. It's just it's almost definitionally juvenile. And so one of the ways that he mixes this in is to go after this guy on Vox. What's his name? Maza? Carlos Maza. And who does these YouTube explainers on different issues, and we played a clip of Crowder that was assembled of Crowder. Basically, every time he does one of these rebuttals to Carlos Maza, which, you know, of course, you should be doing rebuttals if you disagree politically, but he always like sort of buttons them with like, he's gay. And he's Mexican. It's not terribly relevant. It's just gratuitous. Not that there's non-gratuitous, but it's just gay bashing and racism.
Ad hominems are not arguments.
Well, I mean, ad hominems are fine too. It's just that when you make it about someone being gay or Mexican, what happens is you're sending a message to those little kids, those teenagers who watch you. You know, if it's ad hominem, somebody says like, oh, look at Sam Cedar, four eyes, or this guy's, you know, condescending, or he's a shill, or whatever it is. There's no kids out there who hear that and then go and ostracize, bully, beat up other kids because they're condescending. But if they're gay, if they're Mexican, that's what it breeds. So I have no problem with ad hominem. And particularly if you're broadcasting out of Austin, Texas, and you're attacking transgender folks, and you're attacking Mexicans, maybe you've read the paper and you realize that there have been 2 murders of transgender women in the past 2 weeks in Dallas. Half a dozen, I think it is now, 5 maybe in the past 2 or 3 years in Dallas. I don't think it's somebody who listens to Steven Crowder. But if Steven Crowder keeps working at it and keeps preaching like this, maybe someday he'll succeed and be able to reach somebody who does that. I mean, why else, right? I mean, if you're going to go on and attack somebody, essentially attack gay people, attack Mexicans, what is your end goal? Your goal is to get rid of them, right? And so it's a success for you if one of your students goes out and beats the gay out of somebody. And so Maz's complained to YouTube about it publicly because he gets a lot of harassment for being gay. And I don't know what the solution is to this. Obviously, you could demonetize his entire channel. He can keep doing what he's doing, but you can demonetize it. Like, you're not silencing anybody by completely demonetizing a channel. There was a lot of people who were demonetized. Almost all politics were demonetized about 1.5 years ago. And it sucked. It sucked. But if that's what it takes, let's do it. If it's unfair for the guy who is gay bashing to be demonetized and not us be demonetized, demonetize us too. Because at the end of the day, anything that we do here has no relevance if our getting money from this allows him to keep doing what he's doing and getting paid for it. And here is and the reason why I say this, okay? I mean, there was a time actually where some members of Congress, right when Air America started, where they wanted to institute the Fairness Doctrine. I think it was Louise Slaughter, actually. And she invited me down to talk about it because there was no other talkers who would come and support it. And because right and left, they knew that the business model is not supportable in the way that it would be if there was a fairness doctrine. People don't like to mix in their left and right commentary on the same channel. And my attitude was like, you know, the reason why I'm doing this is because, I mean, I need to make a living. But that's secondary to doing this. If I want to make a living, I'll go get a different job. And if you're worried about the suppression of free speech, then the first thing you should be doing is saying, demonetize him and demonetize me. If that's the concern. Because if you don't do that, then I get a question like what your motivation is here. I'm not worried about censuring. And if people are worried that YouTube is too dominant, then cut it up. Decouple it from Google's advertising revenue. Make it a different company. Have competition for advertising. Make it more transparent. So the corporations can know what they're associating themselves with. Make it less financially viable. If you're worried about the censoring that's involved, if you tell gay bashers that you can't make money off of your channel, like you can't use that as a lost leader. I don't care if they demonetize that one video, demonetize the whole channel. Because we know how this works, right? This is a business model. Netflix, HBO, they all have the same business model. The shows that you read about aren't necessarily the ones that everybody's watching. Those are the shows that get people to buy the service to come in. That's called a lost leader. And so even if you demonetize his gay bashing, that's a lost leader. It brings people onto the channel. They make the money the other way. So I have no problem with people going after Steven Crowder. We're not going to be bereft because he's gay bashing. We're not going to get enough of the joking about lisping and whatnot. And if it's a slippery slope, then let's just slide down it. Everybody gets demonetized. All politics demonetized. Let's do it. And the reason why I say this, and we talked about Mozzie yesterday, is because there's been some people ostensibly on the left who are taking issue with Mazza calling for Crowder to stop doing what he's doing. What's this? Is this Jimmy?
Yeah.
Yeah, here's our old friend Jimmy Dore, who was so toxic they had to jettison him from TYT. Oh, no, I know he wanted to go tour. He wanted to go tour. Here he is.
Off to create smart, thorough, engaging content for YouTube.
Pause it. He's reading off of Carlos Maza's tweet where he is contacting YouTube and saying, like, look, I've been doxxed because of this guy.
We also got this video from Progressive Voice, and I think he pulled it from his paywall stream. So it's a little bit low quality. But
oh, is this a one of Jimmy's paywall? This is what you got to pay to hear?
Yeah.
A company that claims to give a shit about LGBT creators. And it's miserable to have that same company helping facilitate a truly mind-melting amount of direct harassment. Really? Is this what your complaint? It's funny. My family sees this shit. Oh, really? Really?
What about the families of the 85,000 kids that have been killed in Yemen? What about those families?
Really? Really? My family sees this shit. I had to explain to my much younger sister what the fuck a Steven Crowder is and ask my siblings not to respond. I had to explain to my nephew what a fucking news dupe is who pushes war for fucking military industrial complex 24/7. I had to explain to them that Wolf Blitzer, Jake Tapper, Rachel Maddow, and Chris Hayes are warmongers and they're tools of the establishment, and that's why they'll never tell you the truth, which is why we have Trump as president. I had to explain that to my nephew. My family sees this shit. This guy, what a snowflake this fucking guy is. This isn't about silencing conservatives. I don't give a flying fuck if conservatives on YouTube disagree with me. Sounds like you do. But by refusing to enforce its anti-harassment policy, YouTube is helping incredibly powerful cyberbully. I'm being bullied, Carlos Maza. Jesus H fucking Christ. Anyway, if you want to help, I guess you can go to this dude's videos and flag them. But YouTube isn't going to do anything because YouTube does not give a fuck about queer creators. It cares about engagement. And homophobic racist harassment is very engaging. Again, the problem isn't Crowder. There will always be a fucking assholes trying to get attention by being bigots. The problem is that YouTube is designed to give those assholes a megaphone, push new followers in their direction, and keep them listening. It's a weapon. Uh-oh. Sounds like he wants to get rid of YouTube. Let's see. Harassment isn't siloed either. Every time he makes one of these videos, his fans flood the comments on the original Fox video. So a piece I spent 4 weeks working on is drowning in homophobic and abusive comments and downvotes.
All right, so there it is. Jimmy Dore poo-pooing the idea that this guy's getting attacked for being gay.
There's a bit more here, finishing that thought.
Comments and downvotes. Other Fox fans see it. It's humiliating. What is wrong with you? What is fucking wrong with you? Are you kidding me? You're upset that people are downvoting your videos and you're humiliated? What in the fucking fuck is wrong with you?
All right, whatever. I mean, I'm less concerned with his feeling humiliated and downvoted than Jimmy just saying that, well, who cares if Steven Crowder is gay bashing you because there are kids dying in Yemen? Maza, incidentally, one of his videos was about the media promoting the, here it is, how the media weapons fetish primes us for war. So it's not like Maza has been a cheerleader for Yemen, but somehow Dore justifies Steven Crowder's, and this is, you know what this is about? This is about Jimmy worried that he's going to get demonetized. If this is what it's all about. And there are some YouTubers who are at the very least I've seen who are at the very least honest about it. But this is Jimmy worried that he's going to get demonetized too. That we're all going to get demonetized because a YouTuber is complaining about being gay bashed. Talk about hypocritical. Jimmy Dore's entire channel has been built upon saying that people who make money, make too much money on cable television, that Chris Hayes is responsible for Donald Trump being elected. How is that the plan? I thought the plan was Jimmy was going to make sure that Hillary Clinton lost so the Democrats could learn a lesson.
So that they could nominate Elizabeth Warren. Look that up.
Oh my God.
Like, Do you remember that?
Was that it was?
He said that in his debate with you.
Oh, is that what he said?
Yeah, I don't know, Elizabeth Warren.
Like the kind of
right
logic.
Who he's now attacked himself. But this is the point, is that Jimmy's making a very good argument that really the whole thing should be demonetized. And
I would say that TMBS is doing pretty well, and I'm not totally sure I agree with all this whole demonetize everybody thing.
I just think it's incredibly hypocritical to say like we can't figure out how to deal with someone being gay bashed. And to equate, to poo-poo the idea that Maza doesn't care about conservatives disagreeing with him and then laugh like, oh, it seems like you do. I think what he's referring to is I don't like the fact that he's calling me, He's basically queer baiting me.
We all know that if you complain about being doxxed, that means that you don't care about the genocide in Yemen.
Well, he's making kind of a weird argument. He's saying, like, don't hate the player, hate the game. YouTube financially incentivizes people to do hate speech, therefore they're going to do it. And then YouTube is, what, hypocrites if they censor it? But, like, that kind of argument could be extended to, like, capitalism as a whole, right? It doesn't get the abusers off the hook.
Yeah, I mean,
and Jimmy Dore is not an anti-capitalist, by the way.
The other thing that just strikes me is, like, one, you could just demonetize all political channels for sure. Two, you need to, regardless of that, start breaking up these companies. I don't think that to me is a separate track that needs to happen. And then three, there's the other aspect of companies, these platforms, acknowledging that they're media publishers and, in fact, hiring and paying well human editors and content curator, you know, whatever the hell they want to call them, and recognizing that, look, this is a journalistic platform. We need to actually invest in it.
YouTube is quite efficient at giving you copyright strikes.
There you go.
Okay. If we were to go and use material that is copyrighted material, we get three strikes. Now, there's two things that can happen. One, if one of our songs hits the stream, we get demonetized for the entire video. It can be 1 minute of a song in a 2.5 hour show, and we get demonetized for the whole thing. Fine. That's somebody else's content. They want the money for it, whatever. We can also get a community strike against us if we use copyrighted material without the permission, without the credit, and we don't have fair use for it. So YouTube can demonetize. We get three copyright strikes, three community strikes. We are demonetized. Period. As a channel. There's no reason why they can't do that.
And I just would say, I mean, and obviously they can do that with machines and algorithms and AI and stuff like that. But I think with, you know, what I would say about the need to actually have editors and so on is, you know, I mean, for what it's worth, like, I think that if you were a channel that did, forget even, maybe you could even make a distinction that, okay, whatever. If you do political opinion, demonetize it. Sure. Okay. You know, that's one proposal. But if you did anything having to do with an actual journalistic enterprise, and one thing that I do see as a potential problem that's much bigger than Jimmy Dore whining about this, but as I say, like the way Facebook has treated Telesaur as an example is a huge problem. And these companies are both ideologically and business-wise not equipped to distinguish between Alex Jones and somebody doing an actual documentary series on, as an example.
That's why you break them up.
You break them up. And I think, though, frankly, even when they are broken up, they're media platforms. And media platforms are eventually going to need to have actual journalistic components to them and be treated as such and hire as such and invest as such.
I think that you need, I mean, look, you could base your conditions upon, you know, something like, I don't know, the way that we do anti-discriminatory housing practices or something like that. Because obviously there's ripe for abuse. Soon as, you know, institute that demonetize the whole platform, the whole channel type of thing, we're going to get attacked. Sam's, calls conservatives a-holes or whatever it is. But you can make it about religion. You can make it about, and you would have to assess it on a complaint-by-complaint basis. And there would be certain amount of channels that would be targeted for it. No doubt. But the idea that you're just going to say, like, okay, we're not going to worry about that because of the policy in Yemen. Who are you kidding? Jimmy Dore cries like a little baby. And I know this for a fact, because I know the people he cried to about it when he was made to look stupid. And I didn't raise it because these people are mutual friends. But I had people talk to me. Jimmy's upset. He's upset because you made him look like an idiot. Well, I'm sorry. He made himself look like an idiot. I wasn't going to say anything about it because he told me he was ill and he was suffering, whatever. But if this is the game we're going to play, you're going to cry about your illness when there are people dying in Yemen? Seriously? You're going to cry about that stuff when there's climate change? I mean, give me a break. What a baby. What a disingenuous baby. All right, we've gone too long.
Well, it looks like we have some new news about this, actually.
What's this? YouTube will now block discriminatory content just a day after saying it didn't violate its policies. YouTube announced Wednesday that it will prohibit videos that promote discrimination or segregation based on things like age, gender, race, caste, religion, or veteran status. The announcement comes just a day after the video platform was criticized how it handles homophobic content. Thousands of channels are expected to be affected by the policy change shortly. There you go. YouTube's new anti-supremacy policy is a joke, a shiny prop meant to distract reporters and advertisers from the alley, which is YouTube doesn't actually enforce any of these documents. Ask yourself this. If YouTube actually has been enforcing these policies against hate speech, bullying, why does it need an additional policy for supremacist content? Isn't that already included? It's all a smokescreen. They don't enforce any of this shit.
This is the capitalism component, because when they do this, there's two components of this. I mean, one, obviously, you know, whatever, they all decided to go after Alex Jones together. And, you know, sure, but a vast majority of these things so far, maybe this will be new, but this would be my guess, affect relatively very marginal channels. Like, the reason that Crowder didn't face any consequence is not because the employees at YouTube think he's funny or agree with his politics necessarily. It's because he's got a lot of views, right? That's it. That's how it works. And then the other part, like at Twitter, you know, like, just even the games, like, some of these people on Twitter are like, they've gotten really aggressive at rudeness. So you see people who say, like, hey, F you, you know, they get banned or whatever for, you know, or taken offline. But there's accounts of, like, you know, Spencer or Molyneux or whatever. They know how to keep inside the parameters of what has been established as, you know, quote unquote, non-threatening, non-bullying or whatever. So everybody around it has plausible deniability. And again, all of those counts. I mean, well, look, you know, Twitter wouldn't exist without alt-right accounts, starting with, you know, Donald Trump.
But kept, you know, the bottom line afloat. Is, like, look, none of this is ever going to be perfect.
Right.
And you're not going to be able to do that. There's no perfect way of doing it. But the bottom line is, how do we diminish the number of, like, there is research that shows that, I mean, you go back to the Milgram experiments. There is plenty of research that shows that the context in which stuff happens, that predispositions that people have are impacted by the context, the societal context, whatever that is. And so if you diminish the rhetoric, Richard Spencer may still be on Twitter, whatnot, but if he's out there saying stuff that's like marginally less offensive, somewhat less offensive, somewhat less supremacist, and I don't know that Spencer is necessarily a good example for this, but whatever, that's going to help somewhat. There's no way to eliminate it all the way through. But, you know, and the issue is less about, like, Carlos Maza's feeling. He's just indicative of what's going on out there for the 13-year-old boy living in some town in Texas where the kid is afraid to admit to himself even that he's gay because of the hostility around him, or some other kid who gets beat up because he's gay, or some other kid who gets killed because he's gay. That's the point. We just know that Carlos Maza has got this problem because it's directed at him and he has a platform to discuss it. But there are literally thousands of other kids out there who are living with this stuff. It's not like only Carlos Maza hears it. It's not like just that kids who may be gay, are gay, watch this and feel bad about themselves. It's that all of the kids they go to school with are watching this shit. And Crowder sits there and he's a voice of authority to them. I mean, to us, he looks like a moron whose daddy has to follow him around for whatever reason.
Well, I think maybe if we dug
into
that, we might feel more
empathy. But to a 13-year-old kid, they look at this guy and they think, here's a role model. And it's cool to make fun of gay kids. It's normal. It's the way things should be. And I don't know. I mean, to have to say like, well, you shouldn't complain about it because of what's going on in Yemen. Seriously? Are you effing serious? My God. How demented do you have to be? How much, how dangerous are those chemicals that you're putting in your hair? Oh, is that childish to make fun of him for his bad dye job? Should I be banned?
I think that is an example of the appropriate kind of ad hominem.
Exactly. Exactly. One that kids are just not going to deal with. All right. I get a little caught up in that. I just think it's disgusting. I just think it's absolutely disgusting. I mean, my God. I get it. You got to brand yourself because Michael Tracy went on and said something about it. And so now, you know, that's your crew, your tribe has said, we're not going to, we're not going to side with the guy from Vox because I don't like Vox. You dye your hair when kids are dying in Yemen? Are you serious? Why don't you send that money to, why don't you send that money to Yemen instead of buying your hair dye? That's what an ad hominem is. That doesn't pertain to a whole class of people. But I know he's not going to be bothered by that.
I don't think our channel should be financially demonetized. Just sitting with that idea, I don't like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not solid thinking.
I know there's a lot of you out there who are going to clip that little segment where it says, like, where specifically where I said, You're crying about kids with the Yemen and the hair dye. I know you're going to clip it. So, okay.
Sometimes we accept the world as it is.
Yeah, what am I going to do? God give me the grace to accept what I cannot change.
You got to use the serenity prayer a lot.
We're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half. Your support makes this show possible. Become a member today. Join themajorityreport.com so that when they demonetize this on YouTube, we can still do this. Built this nice studio.
Well, they don't need to demonetize us now because they're taking down the hate speech.
I mean, look, I'm being sincere about this. If there's no way to do it that doesn't threaten our revenue, then our revenue will be threatened.
But honestly, this is where I agree. I like this, but this is where having an actual journalistic enterprise comes in. Like, you know, the literal distinction and even ability, frankly, to say even as clear as we are on the ideological line, like it's obvious the difference between, you know, an editorial that I think is distasteful, stupid, wrong in The Economist that I will critique, that I might mock, but it absolutely should not be demonetized or bothered or interfered with. I mean, we need to be able to make these actual basic analytic distinctions. It goes well beyond this. This actually is going to our ability to have an open society in the internet age.
Yes. I mean, this is the role that journalism is supposed to play. It was my argument about why my getting fired, frankly, over that tweet was a failure, because
that's right.
I could understand why advertisers to this show would be nervous about that and leave the show. Fortunately, they did not, largely because basically commercial forces, Marin basically said, you can't advertise on our show if you leave a Cedar show. But I understood what was going on in their heads, because they don't have divisions and money to assess the nature of that tweet, the nature of the attack and whatnot. Now, if you're a media company like MSNBC or CNN or ABC or whatever it is, you literally have an army of reporters and editors and people who are paid money to assess what is at least somewhat real.
And Facebook said, okay, we'll start assessing what's real. Let's outsource it to some horrific neocon think tank instead of hiring any number of highly talented and capable unemployed journalists, editors, fact checkers. Right. You know, that's my point.
Right. And it's not like these things aren't enormously profitable. And to the extent that they're not, then maybe it's just not sustainable. Right. Like, you wouldn't open a restaurant and say, well, we just can't afford to pay any waiters. So you got to come up and grab your food at the front. Well, that's not a restaurant anymore.
Well, although Silicon Valley has been built on a restaurant that is making like hundreds of millions of dollars, but it's like the waiters get exposure.
Right, exactly. They can meet all these potential clients that they could go home and do like a Minute Maid service for or whatever it is. But yeah, there's ways of solving this. And the solutions are going to come from people to continue to harass these companies about allowing. I'm sorry. You cannot make a journalistic argument to me about Steven Crowder, because so much of his material is a function of that crap. That I'm sorry. It just doesn't cut it. I'm not worried about the First Amendment because YouTube may demonetize Steven Crowder's channel. I'm not worried about the First Amendment if YouTube demonetizes this channel. You allow me, if I feel strongly enough about gay bashing or promoting Social Security on YouTube, that I'm willing to do it without making any money from it and expending money, good.
Well, that was the I know I'm not, you know, popular for this, but I have real concerns about just taking Alex Jones off of platforms, period, in a monopolistic environment. But not for a second was demonetizing. Like, great, be demonetized. Go ahead, say, feel your thing. Which is, by the way, another total distinction with regards to going after Tucker Carlson and Laura Ingraham's advertisers.
Right. And you can also,
which is a smart and correct, I will also good say
that's
move.
Called the market. What they're getting mad about is the market.
Yes.
Right.
And I will also add this, that you can also say, just like they do, if we were ever to put this show on nonprofit FM stations, no advertising embedded in it either. So you can't give out, can't sell memberships, can't sell anything. You just want to go out there and express your views, go ahead and do it. So, all right. with that said, introducing Hunt a Killer, a monthly subscription game where you become a detective immersed in a murder mystery. It's so interactive and convincing that it looks and feels real. Right now, for our listeners, you can go to huntakiller.com/majority for 20% off your first box. They only accept 200 members per day, so hurry to take advantage of this offer. That's huntakiller.com/majority for 20% off your first box, huntakiller.com/majority. Because, ladies and gentlemen, irony is not dead. And there you go. So we've got to, after all that. Folks, you can support this show by becoming a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Don't forget, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY to get 10% off. Last night, Michael, the Michael Brooks Show happened.
It was excellent. We had a very fun time with Hassan Piker, did a deep dive on a strategy for the left in light of bad European parliament election results. And then Milton Alamadi, who I just can't encourage people enough to seek out and read and watch. We did a long conversation on Thomas Sankara, who is really, especially because he ran Burkina Faso in the 1980s in such a sort of bleak time politically, extraordinary leader and assassinated in a coup backed by the French. We talked about that. A number of other topics. Had an incredible post game with a brand new debunk with Ben Burgess on, can the co-op democracy economy combat the climate crisis, among many other things. Patreon.com/TMBS. This weekend, capitalism versus freedom for patrons.
Jamie?
This week on the Antifada. So we've been doing a lot of cool collaborations lately with all our different podcast friends. And this week, we have released the second edition in our series, High Theory. It's a collaboration with our friends at Swampside Chats, the gayest, highest communist podcast probably in existence right now. And the series is about communization and the communization movement. So in this episode, we talk about a book by Gilles Dauvet, The Eclipse and Reemergence of the Communist Movement. And I got to say, I was a little intimidated by the material going into it because I'm the only one of us who has not been to grad school or even ever studied this kind of thing in school. But I think I got a lot out of it. Things got a little bit heated at times. So, yeah, don't be afraid to listen to it.
Did you say the gayest and highest?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? Like smoking pot? Like
high? They smoke a lot of weed and they're okay. Quite gay.
All right. I wasn't sure.
Self-proclaimed.
Matt is on a retreat, literary hangover retreat. But check out Literary Hangover wherever your podcasts are sold. Or you can also check it out on YouTube. Quick break. Fun half.
You right. Are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun.
Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 boy, back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back, 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 back.
Almost as what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You're